With Magic. I'm going to let him tell us a little bit about that. And Kenneth Ford with the Descendant Freedman Alliance of Kansas City. And I'm going to let both of them explain themselves a little bit. I'm going to start with you, Preston. Tell us your name, your title, the name of your organization, anything you want to say about your group.
My name is Preston Washington. I'm the president of the Midwest Afro-American Genealogical Interest Coalition, which is a mouthful, excuse me here. And we are known as MAGIC. We meet here in Kansas City at the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Heritage Center the first Saturday of each month, with a few exceptions. We meet at noon, and it's a two-hour meeting. We have a business meeting, and then at the 1 o'clock hour, we have a presentation dealing with genealogy, particularly African-American genealogy. We specialize in that. And they came up with the acronym of MAGIC because it takes a little bit of magic when you're doing African-American research to really dig those roots out. And I'd like to tell you about a program we're having on February the 29th at the Midwest Genealogy Center in Independence. And that's on a Saturday. It'll be from 1 to 4 p.m. And our program will consist of a presentation by Ray Heal, and he's going to be talking about the migration of freed slaves coming from Virginia to Missouri. There will also be a short film called Railroad Ties, which will also talk about fugitive slaves and abolitionists and about their heritage. And Lyle Gibson, Professor Lyle Gibson, is going to do a program on DNA, and he does an excellent job. So if you're interested in your DNA or doing your research, you really want to make this event February 29th,
Saturday. Where is it at again?
The Midwest Genealogy Center in Independence.
Okay.
And we would like for people to register. Because we're going to provide refreshments, so we need a count. So you go to their website, the Midwest Genealogy Center website, go to the events page, sign up, let us know that you're going to be there. You really don't want to miss this event.
Well, I got a bunch of questions, but I'm going to let Kenneth introduce himself first. Tell us your name, what the organization you're with, and what your organization's all about.
All right. My name is Kenneth Ford. I'm the, executive director of the Descendant Freedmen Alliance of Kansas City, their DFAKC, so we call it the facts, because that's what we're trying to find, is the facts of our genealogy, our history, and ancestry as people that are mixed with African and Indian culture. We've been around about we're going on 5 years now. We meet every third Saturday of the month at Rockhurst Community Center for the most part. We've got a couple of little variations in the next couple of months, but generally from 11 to 1 o'clock every third Saturday we're at the Rockhurst Community Center. We call it meetings. We have the meetings, monthly meetings, but we call them expos at the same time because we try to also at the meetings help people with genealogy. We try to have some artifacts and exhibits so that people can get an idea of what the mixed Indian culture was about and some of the relics that we've been able to find, some of the papers that we've been able to find. And so we're called a freedman. A lot of people ask, what are freedmen? So basically freedmen are people that of African ancestry who lived among the Indians in the southeastern part of the United States. Sometimes we're married in, sometimes slaves, sometimes, and a lot of people didn't know that the Indians had slaves, but they were slaves of the Indians, and so they were along with the Indian tribes in the southeastern part of the United States when Andrew Jackson brought in the Indian Removal Act. So that meant a lot of those Indians lost their land in that part of the United States. They were moved on the Trail of Tears to Indian Territory, which is now Oklahoma. And fast forward, during the Civil War, a lot of the tribes sided with the Confederacy because they liked, some of them liked having slaves. Not all the tribes did, tribe members did, but those tribes did side. When the Confederacy lost the war, the government, they had to sign a government, a, a, agreement or treaty with the government. And in that treaty was not only peace, but also freedom for the slaves. And also they had to, the tribes had to take in their slaves as a full citizenship. So that's basically where the term freedmen came in. Well, mostly the freedmen a few years later when the allotments, the government again wanted to take Indian land, and they put together what they called the Dawes Act, where they would split up the Indian territory, gave allotments to all the people that were Indian, of the Indian Indian ancestry, and some of the slaves got those allotments too. So they made the Dawes rolls, and some of the rolls were by blood, some were freedmen rolls, and that's where the name freedman basically came in. Excuse me. Even though the black people that were that were slaves under the white rule also were called freedmen, so they're called state freedmen, and basically we're called Indian freedmen. So we deal with the five civilized tribes: Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminole, Chickasee, and Creek. My family happens to be Creek, and that's the one I always miss to forget the name. But that's basically who we are. We're in Kansas City, the facts, Descended Freedmen Alliance of Kansas City. We're, of course, out of Kansas City, but we coordinate with groups all across the country.
Well, I know when I heard you, both of you, during ascertainment, I guess I had never thought of the fact that there was slavery was involved with Native Americans as well, and you'd mentioned that some of it was intermarriage, but some of it was your relationship with slavery. Now, is it your understanding that the Native American slavery was much like the plantation slavery? I mean, was it chattel slavery? Was it somehow different, or does it depend? I guess maybe a difference for different tribes or what have you.
Yeah, it depended. Some of the tribes, the Choctaws, were usually pretty close to the way white slavery, white masters treated their slaves. It was pretty tough. Under the Creeks, it was a little more slavery, to tell you the truth, but a little more like there was one particular chief. His name was Potaleahola, and he was a slave owner. He had a lot of slaves, but he would work beside his slaves. He gave them a lot of latitude in how they did. He didn't trade. He didn't sell them off and all things like that. He was pretty. I guess if there's a nice term for it, he was a good slave master. He was very instrumental in helping a lot of slaves in escape during the war. During the war, and he was a great leader that helped. Helped a lot of the black people.
Okay, I'm curious too. If maybe if the slavery somehow was involved, were you bartered part of the trade with the Indians? I guess. I mean, the slavery usually come through the white folks and then get traded or sold to the Indians. Is that your understanding how it mostly came about?
I think early on, before they left the Southeast United States, that's why they were called the civilized tribes, because they took on and assimilated with the white culture. And they stopped doing a lot of hunting and fishing and started trading for goods and clothing and things. And then slavery was one of the other assimilations they did in the white society. So back then they traded and bartered for slaves and treated them just about the same.
Preston, you mentioned the Trail of Tears when we were talking outside earlier. So anything you want to add to the phenomena of Native Americans? Is that another challenge you have to overcome in tracing the genealogy, for example?
Well, yes, it is. But we also have to understand that we're talking about the five civilized tribes. And there's over 500 federally recognized tribes now, none of which were slave owning. And within the nations, only about 3% of those individuals owned slaves. However, the government backed the slave trade, in that they had black codes, they had laws, etc. Slaves could not own weapons, they could not marry, it was illegal for them to be taught to read and write, etc. And a number of those slaves came over this Trail of Tears, probably in chains for the most part, although we know that there were some who came by boat as well. There were two migrations. The Treaty Tribe, those individuals that signed the Treaty of 1830 left Oklahoma, or left the southeast part of the United States. Most of them were the slave owners. They came by boat, etc. Chief John Ross of the Cherokee Nation held out and took the state of Georgia to court against removal. They won that suit in the Supreme Court. And Andrew Jackson. And one of the misunderstandings about the Trail of Tears and Andrew Jackson, that Supreme Court decision was not binding on the federal government. It was binding on the state of Georgia.
So give us a summary of what the decision was, if I'm not...
Well, Georgia wanted to remove the Cherokees from the state of Georgia after gold was found. Chief John Ross objected. He filed suit. It went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Now, and that chief was a Cherokee.
Yes, John Ross was a Cherokee chief. A long-standing Cherokee chief. 30-some-odd years he was the chief of the Cherokee Nation. And he won that suit. The Supreme Court ruled against Georgia, and the Cherokees were allowed to remain. However, again, that decision was not binding on the federal government. So Andrew Jackson was free to do what he did. From the legal standpoint, he was within his legal rights, but we could say that morally it was kind of messed up.
Pretty bankrupt. Now, yeah. I always knew the Cherokees were involved with the Trail of Tears, I think from an old pop tune, to tell you the truth. But anyway, were the you mentioned the five civilized tribes. Were they part of the Trail of Tears as well?
Was sure.
Cherokees,
Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminoles, and the Creek.
Okay.
Muscogee Creek.
They might have left at various different times.
Right.
Okay.
And signed different treaties and whatnot, but those five civilized tribes were in the southeast, and it applied to the ones that Kenneth just named.
Now, the two of you have done much as far as tracing your own ancestry back, and I'll take it to Preston first, then come over to Kenneth.
Well, my ancestry goes back to the Cherokee Nation and the Muscogee Creek Nation. My maternal grandmother, her parents, her father was Muscogee Creek, and her grandfather was Three-Quarter Creek. Her mother was Cherokee, and the father on that side was 1/16th Cherokee, which is all documented in the records that Kenneth mentioned, the Dawes records. And if you are doing your research, you determine if your family was in the 1900 census in Indian Territory. That was the first census, was in 1900. It covered Indian Territory. So that's a very important census if you're doing your research. And if you have ancestors who were there, then you want to go back and get into the Dawes record to see if they made application for citizenship. You'll find their registration cards. You'll find testimony. Mostly for the Cherokee, you'll find a lot of testimony. Muscogee Creek, not so much. And even Choctaw and Chickasaw, even less. But the records are there.
Did the Native Americans themselves keep any records, or did this come about?
Yes. For example, in the Cherokee Nation, the Cherokees have a record, the 1880 census. So those people that are in the Dawes census are also in the 1880 census. That's how they proved that they were citizens of the nation. In the Muscogee Creek is the Dunn Roll, D-U-N-N, which was 1867?
Somewhere in there.
69,
mm-hmm.
Where the Muscogee Creek Nation went out and took a census of all those individuals who had been held and who had been enslaved in the nation. So when they came up to the Dawes Commission, all they had to do was go back to the Dawes record, or the Dunn record, in the Muscogee Creek Nation, and back to the census of 1880 for the Cherokees, and there they were. The Cherokees also had a census of their freedmen that was done in 1867. And my great-grandmother's on all three censuses. Mm-hmm. So the record's pretty clear there.
Yeah. Kenneth, how about yourself? What's your ancestry look like?
Well, on my grandmother's side, we've been able to trace back to the Dawes Rose, to the Dawes Rose. And with her, as a, she was a baby girl, Gracie Sales, to the Harry and Jane Sales. Jane Sales' father was named John McIntosh, and he was a full-blood Indian chief. We have a problem because he's listed as her father on the Dawes Rolls, but we don't have anything that's where he's listing her as his daughter. And so, because he was married to another, he had a whole nother family. And so, but I've just recently found more information on my grandfather's side, the Ford side, where he married his father was named Harry Ford, who married a Joanna Clayton. Preston just mentioned about the interviews, and there's been extensive interviews that I've been able to uncover for her family. She was her father was a hero, a Confederate soldier in the 79th Colored. I've got records on his. He got a pension, and we've been able to establish those. And then there's, I was just telling Preston about there's some Luckies, a family called Lucky that was on that side of her side. And so I've just uncovered this history, and there's stacks of interviews on that family that I've got to go through. So the history is there. Like I said, my grandmother's side, they're listed on the Dawes record on the Freedmen's, but this on my grandfather's side, this Joanne Clayton, she's listed on the blood. So this should be my connection to the tribals. And the problem has been that when the black people were listed on the Freedmen, Dawes Freedmen roll, that negated their blood. They didn't go by the blood, so that's why it's tough for us to get our citizenship now. And in 1979, the tribes rewrote their constitution and basically wrote the freedmen out, and because they couldn't prove any, because if you weren't on the blood roll, of course you wouldn't have any. They didn't recognize you as being a part of the tribe, even though you look like it. You've been they've been there for years and years and years, and so that's where a lot of the dissension has been in the last 100 years or so.
Sure. Well, Preston, you were showing me a card that you're a card carrying. I guess I don't know if that's the right way to put it or not, but you are a member of a tribe.
Well, yeah, on my Muscogee Creek side, my great great grandfather is listed by blood, and the rule is that under the current administration of the Muscogee Creek, you have to have a blood relative direct that's on the by blood section of the roll, and he is on that roll, and so that's how we trace back to him, and we're able to get our citizenship in that nation. Now, on my great-grandmother's side in the Cherokee Nation, they're allowed into the nation as freedmen. They're not recognized as by blood because my great-grandmother's father died before enrollment. He never enrolled, so he's not on the roll. So as far back as we can go on the Cherokee roll is to her, and she's listed on the freedman roll.
No, it sounds a little bit like it might be easier to get the Native American side of the ancestors as opposed to the African American. I mean, well, tell me, what are some of the challenges you have?
It's what
well,
you're
on either one.
It's
actually
what you're able to prove. For example, on my great grandmother's roll, on her card, she's listed as a freedman. Then, when they ask about her father, who was deceased, and they ask her, was he Indian or was he African? And she said, I don't know, which she didn't. But they listed her father under his citizenship as Cherokee Indian. So they knew. I mean, mm-hmm. The nations know. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are well documented. They know who's who down there in that Indian territory. And although she didn't know, they knew. And they listed her father as Cherokee Indian. But they didn't enroll her as a Cherokee Indian because he was deceased and he was not on the roll. So they put her on the freedman roll.
I'm going to ask Preston, then Kenneth.
Sure.
What have you been able to discover about your ancestry as far as the African-American side is concerned? Where from Africa, and how did you come across that information? How much of a challenge was it?
It's still a real challenge. I'm still working on that in that particular aspect of my research. And this is where DNA is going to prove valuable. And as I was indicating earlier, I have some Africans that that are my colleagues where I work, and I'm trying to get them to submit their DNA. 76% of my DNA is from Western Africa. And thus far, I have not matched with anyone from Western Africa, and I'm trying to get my colleagues here to submit their DNA to see if they possibly match with citizens, us local folks here. So that's a great challenge right now. The slave records within the Dawes record in terms of where they purchased their slaves or what have you. I mean, you have to go back to Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia. Slave records just aren't that available.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can find some family members that might have that are related to those that were that held our folks in bondage, and maybe they have paperwork and records within their families that hopefully they would be willing to share to give us some insight.
Kenneth, same question. What's your ancestry as far as the African side of your blood is concerned?
We've got pretty much the same dilemma. It's tough to trace back. I've got a cousin who I've just met about 3 or 4 years ago. He's I've mentioned my great-grandfather, Harry Ford. Well, Harry Ford was, before he married my great-grandmother, Joanna, he was married to another lady named Serelda. And they had another set of families. And so this cousin of mine, he's actually a reporter, a news reporter in Washington, D.C. And we've shared a little bit. He met the first time we had a 1866 treaty celebration here in Kansas City. He came down and he did a report, and we found out we were cousins, you know. Found out we shared the same great-grandfather. And so he's indicated that there seems to be some lineage back to Nigeria. So we're just have to vet all this and just research it and see just where it goes, basically. But that's about the closest I've been able to ascertain where my African roots would lead me to.
Okay. Well, we've only got a couple minutes left, but I know when I'm talking with Preston, you had mentioned the phrase, are you reparation ready?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what you're talking about there.
That's our theme for MAGIC this year. Are your reparations ready? And you might recall the Georgetown University started giving out scholarships to those descendants of the slaves that helped build that college. Or university. Here recently, the University of Virginia is now looking for descendants of the slaves that helped build that university. And in our current political climate, actually, one of the positive things are those people of consciousness are becoming aware, well, what can I do? And what responsibility do I have? And you think of all the courthouses, state houses, prisons, that slaves constructed, and they may be coming forward now.
To say nothing of our U.S. Capitol, but
exactly.
In the White House.
And so we're asking people, are you reparations ready to prove your ancestry back to a certain area? And they might have been on one of those workforces, or it might be any other item. Some families may start getting a conscious about their ancestry and the role that their family played in enslaving Africans in this country. So, yeah, are you reparations ready? So come out and join MAGIC, and we'll get you reparations ready.
Okay. Well, we've been talking with Preston Washington, president of MAGIC, the Midwest Afro-American Genealogical Interest Coalition, and Kenneth Ford of the Descendant Freedom Alliance of KC, and it's been very interesting, and good luck with your endeavors, and just keep on keeping on, guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, stick right here. We got some messages coming up. Here's a couple of community voices to get us going.
Community Voices is a production of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It is our way of letting the voices of our neighbors be heard. Any opinions and views expressed are those of the speakers only, and not necessarily those of Mid Coast Radio Project, KKFI, board, staff, or volunteers.
This is Richard Mabian, one of the hosts of Eco Radio. It comes on Monday nights at 6 p.m. And what I wanted to bring to you, they could call me the Green Czar. So Kansas is in the process of getting a climate health declaration signed. And this declaration goes, we believe in community resilience. The Kansas Climate and Health Declaration aims to increase awareness of the impact of climate change on the public health, to increase civic engagement on climate action in Kansas, and to advance policies that build community resilience and safeguard the future of our state. They are in the group called Climate Energy Project is in the process of getting people to sign on to this declaration. As president, which I am, of the Kansas City, Kansas NAACP, we signed the declaration. We agree with the American Health Association and believe climate change has a direct impact on vulnerable populations in our community. Children, seniors, low-income communities, community of color, immigrant community, those with chronic disease, pregnant women, indigenous people, and people with disabilities will be most impacted. We actively support community leadership in addressing the adverse effects of climate change. This is Richard Mabian for Community Voices on KKFI Community Radio.
Community Voices is a production of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It is our way of letting the voices of our neighbors be heard. Any opinions and views expressed are those of the speakers only, and not necessarily those of Mid Coast Radio Project, KKFI, board, staff, or volunteers.
Hello, my name is Angela Believes, and I am a volunteer at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I am an artist. I host, I MC, I interview, I write poetry. I started out on MC Richardson's Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City, where that was a variety show where we provoked and educated. I have now moved on to Every Woman, and that is with Una and Fiona Nowling. There, it is a feminist show, and with feminism, we talk about everything because it concerns everything around us. I am here because I am a human being sharing the experience with others by their truth, by their organizations, by their disappointments, by their triumphs. That's what I'm here for. I am willing to partner with any other organizations who are doing wonderful things out there in our community. I am Angela Believes. This is Community Voices for KKFI.
Okay, and so thank you for tuning into Radioactive Magazine. Next week, David Mitchell will be your host, and Zach Pastora, he's a lobbyist in Kansas for the Sierra Club. So if you know David Mitchell, you know that he's got a lot of questions about climate change and the struggles going on to make sure that we do what we can not to destroy this earth, okay?